welcome to the Goal Lines Podcast, your Mid-Missouri football guide. If you don't already subscribe, find us on Apple Podcasts and Google Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's installment of the News Tribune Football Podcast featuring the Blair Oaks Falcons. I'm your host, Tony Hawley, sitting here with Greg Jackson of the News Tribune, and before Greg and I start to discuss things this week, let's listen to a little bit of Greg's conversation with Blair Oaks head coach Ted LePage.
All right, Coach, let's take a quick look back at last week's 56-27 win against Boonville. What were a few things that jumped out on film from you about that game?
Offensive line play was very good. Our offensive line play was really at a high level, especially since we had four underclassmen playing on the O-line. We have an injury, so we had four of our five players were underclassmen. On the defensive side of the ball, I think it was defensive line again. They could not run the football. They were trying. They spent a lot of time making effort at it, but they couldn't get it going. And then they turn around, you're 50% in the throwing game. Even though you're going to get some explosive plays, we feel like we win the battle in that situation. Special teams, the thing that jumps off at me was just, onside kicks. Two of them were perfectly executed. I can't say anything more than that. The third one we could have got. But, most of the time in the special teams game, we just dominate. And I thought that was an area where they kind of had a heads up on us this past time.
And one of the things we talked a little bit about after the game was the time of possession battle. And I think when I did all the math, Boonville had the ball for 32 of the 48 minutes. And, again, a lot of that was by design, by running down the play clock. Week five, we talk about how tough this defense is, but we haven't seen teams try to control the clock like that. I mean, what kind of a difference does that make for your defense moving forward, having experienced that in the regular season?
Well, it was huge because, first of all, we got to watch it and see where people were trying to attack, where they tried to attack. They had a dynamic player. They tried to get the ball in his hands. We'd take that dynamic player away. They would try to counteract. But it was getting that fourth down stop. We got two of them. We got two fourth down stops, but they converted on four. And, get that fourth down stop. That just changes the momentum so much in the game. And so from that standpoint, it was play till the last snap. When the series is over, you can come off field. I think a couple times we probably relaxed on fourth down, which is something we kind of addressed with them then. Hey, we play defense for four downs, not three.
And looking at this week's opponent, Seaman Vikings at Topeka, Kansas. The first things first, I want to talk. Okay, so to remind people, this is the game that's replacing Versailles on the schedule since they left the Tri-County Conference. And that's not an easy thing to do in the middle of a two-year cycle. Can you explain how you all were able to find Seaman and get them on your schedule?
I give all the credit to Clay Crouch, our athletic director. He sent out everything. Nobody, of course, no responses. Got a response from Topeka Seaman. We also, within about an 8-hour period, got a notice from Quincy Notre Dame, and Clay sent it out there and said, "Hey, Quincy Notre Dame just contacted us," and Seaman said, "Well, we'll come there." Said, "All right, done deal." And we thought it was a good situation when he was talking to me about it. When we first sat down, he goes, "Hey, this team's reached out to me. Being a larger school, getting the playoff points, which helps us in our playoff ranking systems, it's a win-win for us because we get to play against a really fine football team. And they're also larger, so we get the playoff points that come along with it."
And what have you seen from this team on film?
Very disciplined. You're a Class 5 school in Kansas, so that equates out to Class 5 school here. You just see that everybody looks like what they're supposed to at their positions, if you understand what I mean by that. They are very disciplined. You're going to see them run a play, and everybody's going to do what they're supposed to do. There's not any lax in what they do. And then they play full four quarters. The other thing that we've seen from them, they have a full concept of playing team football. They only have two guys go both ways. Everybody else is a platoon, so it's going to be evenly matched in that category. We played Luther North this year. They did a little bit of that where, you're going to just play one guy's on one side of the ball, and I think that's really paid dividends for them. They could be 4-0 just as easy. They could be 2-2. The two games they've lost in the last couple seconds, one of them in overtime, the other one in the last series. So this is a team that could be very easily 4-0.
All right, that was Blair Oaks head coach Ted LePage. And Greg, I gotta tell you, it's one of those things, looking at last week's game from the standpoint of, we talk about it often, But I do think that the ability of Blair Oaks to score points in bunches is something that can't be overstated from the standpoint of, you know I saw a lot of chatter on Twitter. I heard some people talking around town. I heard something on one of the radio broadcasts of a different game talking about, oh, Blair Oaks got a game on their hands. You know, it's only 21-14 and a half. It's 28-21, you know, early in the second half. They've got a game on their hands. And then all of a sudden you turn around and the end score ends up being 56-27. It's just that hard for other teams to score as much as Blair Oaks does to keep up with them for a full game.
So as someone who was there,
uh-huh,
what the scores people saw on social media and what I was witnessing are not quite the same.
Okay.
So yes, the score was close. The game really wasn't close, and here's why.
Okay.
Blair Oaks had 8 possessions. They scored 8 touchdowns.
Right.
Boonville could not stop them and therefore was never going to get past them.
Okay.
The reason why it was close was for a couple of things. One, Boonville onside kicks every kickoff.
Okay.
And so let's see, they scored 4 touchdowns and they started the second half with the kickoff, so it's a grand total of 5 kickoffs. They recovered 3 of those onside kicks.
Okay.
So they stole 3 extra possessions. Here's another reason why Boonville didn't get the lead. They didn't score on any after recovering any of those onside okay. kicks. So it's almost like you did that and you ended up wasting clock.
Right.
Now, here's another reason why. I mean, the time possession battle makes a big difference because Boonville had the ball for 32 minutes. Blair Oaks had for 16. Now, you look at that, Blair Oaks was efficient. They scored 8 touchdowns, so they averaged right. 2 minutes per scoring drive.
Yeah.
Boonville, and I think this is where Boonville was smart. They ran down the play clock. Okay. They didn't snap it until 1 or 2 seconds left. To me, that's smart. You keep the ball out of Blair Oaks' offense's hands as long as possible.
Sure.
In that aspect, I thought they did well.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about wide receivers a lot for this game and next week's game, but we'll start with this week's game. Dakota Troost had 9 catches, I believe, for 223 yards and 3 touchdowns. He was as good as advertised.
Yeah.
The thing that makes me a little uncertain, honestly, I know I've only seen half the conference teams, but I would argue he might be the most explosive offensive player in the conference
okay.
because he had touchdown runs of like 75 yards and 60, not touchdown runs, touchdown catches of 67 yards, 75 yards, and I think the last one might have been 27, something along those lines. So the two big ones accounted for 150 of his, like for basically 67% of his receiving yards.
Yeah.
9 catches and he had another 4 carries. He had the like 30. He touched the ball on 13 plays. Boonville ran about 70 plays. I would argue he's the most explosive offensive player in the conference, and he barely touched the ball. He did not touch the ball on 20% of the plays. To me, I'm not saying you need to throw the ball to him every time, and I'm not saying you might need to hand off to him a little bit more, but you've got to get the ball in his hands more often because good things seem to happen anytime he touched the ball. And just using him as a decoy, while that does open things for other players, I mean, having a you know, Eli Stock had 30 carries for 80 yards. That's not going to get you touchdowns. That helped eat up clock, but that's not going to get you touchdowns
right.
if you're Boonville. So, I mean, I thought that was pretty good for Boonville to get 78 or 27 points, but I felt like they could have done more if they wanted to. That being said, Blair Oaks' defense, that was a good game in that aspect that they, yes, they gave him a couple big plays, but, man, they got their endurance cut out for them in that game because being on the field for 67%
right.
of the game time is pretty impressive.
And that number that you said of just the you know 2 minutes per possession for Blair Oaks to score is really kind of amazing when you go, it wasn't like it was a quick strike from the standpoint
yeah.
of we threw a 7-yard touchdown pass, we came back, and we threw another long touchdown pass.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a team that carried the ball enough to, I mean, they
yeah.
averaged 10 yards per carry, which is,
yeah.
which is an amazing stat. But it's also like it wasn't like they just were throwing the ball and they were scoring quickly that way. They were scoring quickly while they were running a lot.
Really, yeah, that was one of the things Coach LePage emphasized. He's like, we stopped throwing the ball because we're like, why throw the ball? I lost count. I remember I put it in my Sunday story, but they had between 15 and 20 carries that went for 10 plus yards. And it was different guys. And we haven't even mentioned this yet. Blair Oaks had 3 100 yard rushers
right.
in the game. That
right.
I don't know if I've ever covered a game. I've covered a game with 2 100 yard rushers on one team. I don't know if I've covered 3. You
right.
had Tyler Baggs with about 168 yards, I believe it was. Eli Luckett got 137, including a 37 yard touchdown on his last carry. And then Hayden Lackman And I mean, this is one of the things that took me a while, was making sure, because when the game ended, I had Lackman with 98. But then when I went back and added it all up, my math was off, coincidentally, by 2 yards, and I got him to his 100. And you know, those three each averaged about between 8 and 10 yards a carry. So it wasn't just one guy having a lot of big runs and then the others kind of lowering the average. All three of them were having big runs throughout the game. And then, you know, we talk, you know, Jace Rackers had a 10-yard touchdown run. Nick Closter had a jet sweep where he gained a ton of yardage. I think it got called back on a penalty, but it would have been for 11 yards after the penalty. So it's just one of those things where anybody was having a good game run the ball against Boonville's 3-3 stack defense.
Yeah. So the end result is the Falcons moved to 4-1 overall, 3-0 in the Tri-County Conference. And this is a team for so many years where you go, look at this schedule. It's the same old people at the same old times. Even the non-conference ones get to be a familiar feel sometimes. This is one of those very odd weeks where we look at it and go, okay. And you know, but even yet, it's maybe a kind of somewhat familiar name for Blair Oaks fans, but it's one of those things where you're looking and go, okay, 7 o'clock today versus Seaman, Kansas at the Falcon Athletic Complex. It's a team from Topeka, and we'll let you go and tell us more about them.
So to start this all off, this is where Versailles would have been slotted in the schedule. And for those who aren't aware, Versailles, during the football offseason, announced they were leaving the Tri-County Conference for the Ozark Highlands Conference, which, you know, has like El Dorado Springs, Stockton, I believe Buffalo. I mean, there's like 6 or 7 schools. It's better for them football-wise. I think, I mean, we've seen them already win a couple of conference games this year. I think they just beat Cole Camp this past week. So, honestly, it's a good move for Versailles because they probably... I think they probably would have gone winless in the Tri-County Conference this year. So for a competitive balance, this was a good move for them. But usually when you leave for one conference to another, it doesn't come in the middle of a 2-year schedule cycle for football. So normally they would have had to wait until after this year whenever everybody redoes their scheduling. Well, the Tri-County Conference went on ahead and let them out of it. So now everybody in the Tri-County Conference between weeks 3 and 9, each one of them, it's like the CMAC, essentially. Each one of them has to play a non-conference game.
Right.
This week is Blair Oaks' turn. I mean, Hallsville, I believe Eldon had the non-con game in week 3, Hallsville in week 4, and then Southern Boone last week played Quincy Notre Dame. So how do you find an opponent, and that's not, again, like I said, it's in the middle of the schedule cycle, so that's not easy to find somebody. You have to find somebody who has an open date. So at first, you know, athletic director Clay Crouch didn't get, I mean, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of interest at first. Then the Seaman Vikings from Topeka, Kansas reached out to them. And then in that same day, Quincy Notre Dame also reached out to him, which that's who Southern Boone played last week, as I mentioned. So now you've got two teams interested. Well, what do you do? Well, now Topeka Seaman comes back and says, we'll come to Wardsville. And honestly, that was probably what sealed the deal because I think Blair Oaks would have had to go to Quincy Notre Dame. Why travel up to Quincy and play a bigger school when you can have a bigger school come home and you gain that home game? And really, I believe this was supposed to be I can't remember if this was going to be a home game or not with Versailles in the schedule. But either way, you keep or you add a home game. So that's why Topeka Seaman is coming. This is going to be a 1-year thing, even if, you know, trying not to get too far, of course. Right now there's 7 teams in the conference. If they don't add an 8th team before next year, it's going to be like this all over again where Blair Oaks has to find another non-conference team to take that opening. But so this is just going to be a 1-year thing. This is going to be the one time they play them. I don't believe they're going to play next year. And, you know, Topeka Seaman is a Class 5A school. They are big. They've got more than 1,100 kids. They're 2-2. They've won. Their first two wins were both blowouts. Their last two games have both been losses, and they're both close. One was in overtime, and the other was a last-minute loss to a rival. It's a very good team that could very easily be 4-0 right now, and that would, and you know, they would make them look that much tougher. So I'm trying to get around to this thing, is they are a good team, especially for Class 5.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of indicative of the way that, you know, if all things being equal, you would have been able to find, well, you might not have been, because Blair Oaks is going to be hard to find. It's not like a lot of teams are going, oh, we've got an opening. Sure, we'll take you. But I do feel like that it's not part of the Falcons' DNA to also go, let's just go out and find anybody.
Yeah.
They want to go out and find teams that are good, that have a good pedigree, that are going to present a test. It's not like they're just looking to fill the schedule with any old rum-dum. They're looking for somebody that can actually make them get better by the time you get done playing the game.
And I'm not trying to knock the Tri-County Conference schools because, again, you had very little time. You wanted to find anybody as opposed to having a bye week. But you take a look. Eldon played Gateway out of the St. Louis area in week three. Eldon blew the doors off them. That game would not have done anything for Blair Oaks.
Right.
Boonville, I think their week eight non-conference game is Springfield Central. That game would do nothing for Blair Oaks. You know, like I said, and honestly, I think Quincy Notre Dame, I know their record is 1-4 or 1-4 now. That was a great game for Southern Boone. That was a fantastic finish from what I heard. That was a great non-conference pickup.
Right.
So again, you never know what you're going to get. You know, some schools might want that easy win. Some schools might just take whoever's available that week. And like I said, in Blair Oaks' case, they had a couple schools interested, and they have one that's really good and that is going to challenge them. You know, we talk about how this is weird, although it's not quite as weird as that 2020 instance when Blair Oaks had to pick up Valley Catholic less than 48 hours before they kicked off because Versailles had to skip the game due to COVID restrictions. So, not quite as weird as that. At least Blair Oaks knew who they were going to play in this week 6 months ago.
Yeah.
But again, you're right. It is different because the way the Tri-County Conference is set up, you play the two non-conference games, and then you play seven conference games. So, that's why this is a little weird to see a mid-season non-conference game.
So you mentioned it earlier. We had, you know, we had the Falcons having a little bit of trouble with a stellar wide receiver last week. The Seaman has a stellar wide receiver of their own, don't they?
They do. His name is Callum Barta. This past summer, he committed to Nebraska. So, you know, not just a D1 wide receiver commit, but a Power 5 FBS D1 commit. I guess one of the things when I was trying to ask Coach LePage about how you compare and contrast him with Dakota Truce, Dakota Truce was more of like a quote-unquote scat back. Like, basically, his deal is he wants to get the ball and then he's going to make you miss tackles. Okay. Whereas this kid just finds a way to get open. They will throw the ball downfield to him. And actually, that was one of the things he talked to me about was with their defensive backs. It's like, don't try to jump up with him because there's a good chance you might end up bumping into him, getting a pass interference call.
Sure.
He's like, really, one of the things we've taught them is, like, if he is able to go up in high point and catch those jump balls, if you see it in his arms, try to knock it away before he comes down and gets that long long reception. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see if we're going to see many double teams with him because we did see them kind of have two guys covering Truce. And if you take a look at the Blair Oaks secondary, it's not like they've got 6'3", 6'4", guys playing back there.
Well, that's my question.
It's a lot of 6 foot, 6'1", quick guys.
Yeah.
And to be honest, a lot of them do a good job. They've got great hands. They know how to time the pass deflections well. That's what's going to be interesting is you've seen one good guy last week in Troost, and he was able to rack up a lot of yards. How different is it going to be with Callum Barta, and how different?
Say, how big
is it
a target
be?
Is he? I mean, how, you know, do we have a height on him?
You know, the roster I have said he's 6 foot and 140. I think that's got to be a couple years old. I would be shocked if that was still. You know, looking at him on film, he looks typical. Like he looks 6'2", 6'3", maybe 185. Okay. I think he's just I think the way Coach LePage described it is his speed is deceptive.
Okay.
Like he. It almost looks like he's moving in slow, like when he's running, everybody else is kind of moving in slow motion. So I think you could say a lot of D1 recruits in high school, that's how they look at the game.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is an interesting game from the standpoint of, you know, obviously you want to play well. Obviously you want to acquit yourself well against a good team. And you're not just coming into this one going into saying, this one doesn't matter, so we don't care.
Right.
But this is going to be one of those interesting ones where this game doesn't really hurt you from the standpoint of, not only just it's an out-of-conference game, so it doesn't hurt you in terms of your conference goals. You know, if say you were to lose to them, the amount of points you're going to get for playing up in the size, that doesn't hurt you. It's also an opportunity, one of those rare times where you go, this is one of those mid-season games where you can go, you know what, if maybe we need to rest some people for one reason or another, maybe we rest them this week, because it's not a game that is going to determine ultimately what our fate is. Yeah. So how does all that play into maybe what we see on the field tonight?
Okay, so it's really hard. I know you bring up a lot of good points, and it's hard to say how... I mean, obviously, you're right. They're going to try to win this, obviously. I don't know if this is like a Elias playing a Cardinal Ritter type deal, especially since those two are in the same class. But as you're alluding to, with Seaman being Class 5 and Blair Oaks being Class 3, there's going to be a lot of bonus points. And I would argue those, but if Blair Oaks were to lose by 13 or more points, that washes out that loss.
Right.
I think this is a game where if Blair Oaks can win by 13 plus points, that is by far the best outcome, and they need all the points they can get, because if you take a look, they're number 3 in the district standings right now, even though they're ranked number 1 in the state. The two teams that are ahead of them are Moberly, I believe they're number 1, and Centralia is number 2. Moberly is undefeated, and they play up a lot because they're in the NCMC, and a lot of those schools are Class 4, and they're going to get more bonus points because they also have a game against Jefferson City down the road, and they're a Class 4 school. So I would argue, worst case scenario, like, Moberly's probably going to be 7-2 at the end of the season with a ton of bonus points. I don't know, even if Blair Oaks goes 8-1, I don't know if they can catch them.
Okay.
They really need Centralia to get tripped up and maybe lose to like a South Shelby or another really good Clarence Cannon Conference team in order to steal that number 2 seed away from them and get home field for what would be a big district semifinal game, because Centralia is ranked number 4 in the state.
Right.
I think that best case scenario, that's the way Coach LePage described it to me, is this is a win-win. You know, we are going to play a really good team, and we are going to get bonus points from it, and it can only help us.
Yeah. So I guess then that means that obviously you'd like to win this one because of all those extra added incentives. So how healthy are the Falcons heading into this one, and will they have a full complement of players in order to help them maybe try to do that?
I mean, yeah, they're fairly healthy. Again, other than the typical, like we've talked the past few weeks, I mean, you know, Carson Lubring is still obviously done for the year with that knee injury. They're hopeful to get Justin Atnett back. I believe he dressed last week for Boonville, but they didn't put him in. Still nursing that ankle injury, so he's missed the last two games, hurt it in week 3 against Osage. He will dress again tonight. The hope is to get him in for at least a few series, I would think. But again, you know, playing a bigger school, the last thing you want to do is rush him back and he get hurt. So I think the goal is to maybe get him a few series, and then if he's feeling good in the following week, you know, put him back full time. But, you know, again, Caden Schulte has been doing great on the O-line without in his place. Defensively, I think they're doing just fine. You know, Aiden Luckett's been looking really good on the D-line in Carson Lubring's play. So, again, it's one of those things where, you know, their backup players, it's an instance where Blair Oaks' backup players could be starting for a lot of teams within the conference. So, you know, they do a great job of stepping up and filling in.
Yeah. All right, I guess it's to the prediction point of the podcast, and this might be trickier than some of your normal expertise moments, but yeah. How do you see this one playing out tonight?
I mean, like I said, I had the News Tribune picks this week, and I prefaced it by saying I have absolutely no idea how this one's going to play out. I think I looked up on Massey, and to tell you just how little I have an idea, the Massey calculation has Blair Oaks win this one 49-28, which, I mean, my good, I saw that and I was like, I thought if anybody was going to win by 3 touchdowns, they'd have Seaman.
Right.
Just because, again, like we said, we have no idea. And how often does Blair Oaks ever play a Class 5 school? So that's why this is just such uncharted territory. That being said, I'm still going to go with my News Tribune pick, which I had Seaman winning 42-35, but there's no way of telling how this game's going to play out beforehand.
All right, that should do it for this week. For Greg Jackson, I'm Tony Hawley, saying thanks for listening.
For more information about this week's game, pick up a copy of the Goal Line section in Friday's News Tribune and get game updates and more prep sports content all week by following Greg Jackson on Twitter at ActionJackson05. That's Action JAXON05. Thanks for listening.